Anybody ready to draw some circles today? Are you sure? We began week before last, talking about concentric circles, and that's kind of what, there it is, there's a concentric circle. And I love the definition that St. Augustine said about the character of God, the nature of God. God is a circle whose center is everywhere and circumference is nowhere. In other words, wherever God is, that's the center. That's His nature. He is all present. And it is up to us to make sure that we keep God the center of our circle and our circles. And everywhere we are and everything that we're doing and anybody that we're with, God needs to be the center point of that relationship, because we're talking about building and prioritizing relationships, and we want to do it God's way. How many of you know God's way is the best way? God's way is the best way. And if we'll do it His way, listen, our chances of a peaceful life increase greatly. When we do it our way, you know, one of the reasons we want to do it God's way is because He sees the end result. He knows the beginning from the end and the end from the beginning and everything in between. And He's the God who inhabits eternity, past, present, and future. He is smarter than we are. And that's one of the reasons He gave us His wisdom. He gave us His Word. And He tells us certain things about this is how you live life. And when He brought the children of Israel out of bondage, and we too come out of bondage when we accept Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, we come out from under the control of Satan, and we come into the kingdom of His dear Son. And we're born again, we're set free. And one of the things that He said to them, He says, I'm the God who brought you out of bondage. And He says, now listen, here's how to stay out of bondage. Don't put anything before Me. Don't make images. Don't bow down and worship images. During that time, they did that. They made literal gods. They made the golden calf. They made different things. You say, well, we don't do that anymore. Yes, we do. We just don't call them God. But we put them in that position. It could be your car. It could be your stuff. It could be your bank account. It could be your profession. It could be your spouse. It could be your children. It could be any number of things that we put before God. God says, I'm jealous, and that's not a bad thing for Him. Usually it is for us, because when we're jealous, we're wanting something that somebody else has. There's nothing that we can give God that He doesn't already have. In fact, He gave you everything that you have. His jealousy is for your heart. He wants to be number one in your life, because He so much wants to bless your life. And your number one enemy is not the devil. Your number one enemy is the person that you look at when you look in the mirror. Because we have a tendency to make wrong decisions based on wrong things. We think we can do it our way. And God says, no, do it My way. And the first thing that you have to do is to put Me first. Don't worship anything but Me. And says, don't use My name in a way that is non-productive. Don't use My name in vain. Know what I'm about. Know what I'm for. And always use My name in a way that is producing. And we just think, when you don't take His name in vain, that means don't cuss. Well, it means that, but it means much more than that. So we talked about drawing that core circle. And we'll go back to the concentric circle. As we look at that, whatever is at the core of that circle is the thing that drives our life. If you're at the core, then in your mind, God revolves around you. God exists to make you happy. Let's turn that around. You exist for His pleasure. He doesn't exist for your pleasure. His pleasure is pure. Many times our pleasure is not pure. Because what we desire, when we're the center of our life, all of our relationships are built around us. My wife exists to meet my needs. My children exist to make me happy. How many of you know they don't do that a lot of times? Now, children are a joy, but they don't always make you happy. Sometimes you want to just beat the dog out of them because they misbehave, okay? But when we are self-centered, everything exists around us. Our friendships exist around us. They're my friend. They do this for me. They do this for me. And therefore, they're my friend. If they quit doing that, guess what? Then they're no longer my friend because they don't make me happy. Whatever is at the core is what drives every relationship that you have. And if we're going to put God at the core, listen, we have to do it His way. Okay? So today we're going to talk about the second circle. This is the second most important relationship that you can have. I'm mainly talking to married people today. But this also applies to single people. People who will be married someday. Even dating people. And I will make some exceptions as we get into this. But we're talking about the relationship that we have with our spouse. That is a relationship that is an exclusive relationship. Now, what is the center of that relationship? It's whatever you make it the center. Guess what? If you're self-centered, then you're the center. If the spouse is the center, then everything revolves around that. If God is the center, guess what we're striving to do with our marriage? We're striving to do it God's way. God's way. We revolve around God. It don't revolve around me as the husband. It doesn't revolve around my wife. It revolves around my relationship with God. Anywhere I am and anybody that I'm with in any kind of relationship, I need to remember that God is the center. And I need to keep Him the center of that relationship. That will determine how I treat other people. My responsibility is to, and yours too, is to represent our center. What does the word Christian mean? Christ-like? Do you know some people who say they're Christian that are anything but like Christ? Have you ever been around any of those? Have you ever been around a selfish Christian? Lots of them. What's the problem? God's not their center. It's easy to see if God is the center of a person's life. All you got to do is listen to them talk and see how they behave. He said, well, you're not supposed to judge. You're not supposed to condemn. You have to make judgments. I made a lot of judgments before I married that woman right there. And you need to do that. Before you have a friendship with somebody, a close friendship, you need to make a lot of judgments about that person. You can do that without condemning them. So when we're talking about the marriage situation, I'm going to mainly talk to people who are already married. But the building blocks of this circle would also apply to those who are not married and those who are maybe in a friendship relationship with someone of the opposite sex or a dating relationship with someone of the opposite sex. Now, I did say that. So we're going to talk about some building blocks for a strong marriage. I love this quote. It says, success in marriage does not come merely through finding the right mate, but through being the right mate. A lot of people are looking for somebody who can complete them. You need to be complete before you enter into a relationship. If you're looking for someone, I mean, honestly, listen, you can't have babies by yourself, okay? There are certain things that only men and women can do together. And there is that completion part, the physical part, the all of that. But when you're looking to someone else to complete you, are you not putting that person before He who is the only one who can complete you? Now, listen, honestly, in a right relationship, you will add value to each other. You will make each other so much better. But listen, you have got to, instead of looking for the right mate, strive to become the right mate. I told one of my boys a long time ago, he was saying, "Well, Dad, this is the kind of woman I want. She's got to be this, 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 and this." And I said, "Son, are you that? You need to work on you becoming that, and God will connect you with that person that He has for you." Okay? Don't look for somebody else to complete you. You be complete, and then you become the right person. And listen, like attracts like. I want a gorgeous woman, and I want this. And then there's nothing wrong with wanting a gorgeous woman or a handsome man. But if you, listen, if you base your relationship entirely on that, I have seen some gorgeous women who are ugly on the inside. They're vain, they're self-serving, they're self-seeking, they're all about themselves. Get away. Get behind me, Satan. I don't care how pretty they are, okay? I don't care if they're gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. That's one of the problems with Hollywood. Why so many of those marriages fail. They are so vain and so shallow. And people base too much on sight. Let's become what we're supposed to become, and we will attract that to ourselves. So let's talk about eight things that have to do with building a strong marital circle, because it is that second circle that is so important. Now, if you're single and you're looking for someone to possibly marry someday, this is some of the things that you need to look at where this other person is concerned. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is love and commitment. Love and commitment. Not just love, but love and commitment. There is a committed love. You know, a lot of times when we do marriage vows, we will say, "I take you for better or worse." Now, usually at that time, you're seeing the better. Can I tell you, you're going to see the worse. You're going to see the worse. It you're just going to see that. For sickness and health, I have seen a spouse that gets sick, and then the other spouse divorces them and gets rid of them because they're not committed. So we're talking about love and commitment. Love and commitment. See, I gotta confess something. I've confessed this before, but I love watching those Hallmark movies. I know. It's terrible, isn't it? But they just warm your heart. You see these romantic relationships, and oh, I mean, they're just—it's just like this attraction that takes place, and you know all of this, and then he does something stupid, and she turns him away, and then it was a mistake, and they get back together, and they kiss, and the movie ends. There's more to it than that. Love is a decision. Now, I like the attraction. First time I saw Kathy Green, I was attracted. Big time. Long red hair past her waist, mini skirt. I was attracted. I was a Christian. But I was smart enough to know I have been attracted to a lot of women in my life. Women, I mean, Attraction is just something that happens. But I always had in my mind that they got to be attractive, but listen, they also have to have a spiritual base too. And so when I saw her, I began to inquire about her, and I found out that she was a Christian. That's another check mark. That was another check mark. So that attraction is there. But love is a decision, not always a feeling. I think a lot of times in people, what we call, we fall in and out of what we call love, which is not really love. I mean, it has to do with, you know, sometimes when your spouse acts ugly, you think, ugh. And then when they act good, you think, yes. But this does this. But love is bigger than that, because love is a decision to be committed to another person. To be committed to another person. And it really doesn't have anything to do. This is why maybe the getting to know you stage before you get married is so important. You need to see that person get mad. You need to see that person at their best and at their worst. And then you need to think, okay, am I willing to be committed to that? Because that's what I'm going to be committed to. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Okay? But it is a decision to be committed to another person. And it's far more than a fleeting emotion, as we see on the Hallmark movies. Because honestly, when you've been with someone a long time, your attraction levels ebb and flow. They ebb and flow. They ebb and flow. And you have to know that. I mean, some of the excitement, it ebbs and flows. It ebbs and flows. And when you're talking about the sexual part, that changes over time. It changes over time. And we go through periods of time, maybe in our marriage, where we're a little bit bored or something like that. But we have to remember that love is a decision to be committed to another person. Now, when Kathy and I first got married, it was lovely. It still is lovely. But guess what? I love her for different reasons than I did when I first met her. There's two traits about my wife that I just love. Number one, she was a fantastic mother. She raised our children. I never will forget that, you know, I was always up speaking when we were in church. She had those little gentlemen sitting in a row right next to her. If one of them showed out, guess what? She took them out and dealt with it. She loved her kids. She was committed to her kids. She disciplined her children. I helped. Okay? But she was a fantastic mother. The second thing, and this to me this is even greater, is that she is a fantastic grandmother. You want to see some red-headed hackles come up? You say something about her children or her grandchildren, and she's fixing to be on you like ugly on an ape. She will get you. I mean, but that is her domain. That is her purpose. That's her purpose in life. She loves her family. I needed that. Another thing that I have always loved about her is that she's not like this emotionally. Now, she can get mad. I have seen the wrath of Kathy. I have seen it a few times. But she's not like this emotionally. She's kind of like this. Being a pastor, that is a perfect situation. You get to go home and you don't go home to crazy. Because sometimes I deal a lot with crazy. But I never had to deal with that when I came home. I might have to deal with something else, but it was not that. So you're going to see that feelings come and go. But a true decision to be committed lasts forever. It lasts forever. It's not till a better deal comes along. For me, there is no better deal. Why? because she is the one that I made those vows to 44 years ago. Coming up on 45 years, we made those vows. Has it always been easy? No, it's when I learned to say, yes, dear, it got easier. I'm kind of stubborn sometimes, and I'm kidding just a little bit. But that is what defines true love, is commitment. Commitment. See, it's a decision to be committed through the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, when things are going well. Commitment is easy. But true love is displayed by remaining committed through the trials of life. How many of you know that life is a trial? You're going to face issues. And it is so much easier to be able to face those together and not alone. And be committed to one another and see these things through together. We're at a great point in our life is we got empty nest. Let me tell you something. Empty nest is wonderful. It is really wonderful. Now, we like it most of the time, but we like to be around our grandkids. We take our grandkids home with us from church many, many times, and we give the kids a break. They can do what they want to, and we have the grandkids, and it's fun, and I'm always ready for them to go home when it comes time for them to go home. But this is a wonderful time of life. We're able to do things together that we were never able to do financially because of our obligation to raise our children, to put them through school. I mean, I was paying insurance on 3 teenagers at one time, car insurance. That's tough. And that was back in the 80s and the 90s, and that was very expensive. Then I don't know what it is now. It could be crazy. But we just weren't able to do certain things. Now we're able to plan things and our vacations that we do together, and we camp together. We take our grandkids camping some. It's just a good time of life that we're in. And I'm just looking forward for what God has for us. And that's the way we need to be with our spouse. And we need to be able to talk about those things. And we will get with those in a minute. Okay, let's deal with the tough one. Sexual faithfulness. Sexual faithfulness. Can I just tell you that affairs are rampant in our society and in our churches? I'm just going to be as open and clear as I can be. It's happened in this church many times. Some that we know about and some that we don't know about. It's happened. That's part of life. I would like to think that everybody is always good, but I know that it's happened. Couples need to realistically be aware of the fact that our marriages are susceptible to affairs. If you say, that could never happen to me, that is the first step towards that happening to you. I'm going to try to keep this as real as I can. This makes me a little uncomfortable because I don't like talking about sex, okay? Be careful. Sexual faithfulness in marriage includes more than just bodies. It includes our eyes, our mind, our heart, and our soul. When we devote our minds to sexual fantasies with another person, we sacrifice sexual faithfulness to our spouse. Let me speak from the standpoint of a male. I am a male. I am not dead. I am old, but I am not dead. Okay? Younger men, this is a great challenge with younger. It's a challenge to older men. It doesn't matter. As long as you have any kind of sexuality about you whatsoever, there is this thing that happens when you see someone and they are attractive. That is very, as a married person, that is You have to be on guard about those things. You need, men, you need to train your eyes. Okay. I'm going to turn red, okay? Many times women dress in a way that can be very provocative. When they wear low-cut blouses and they bend over, you can see about anything that you want to see. Men, what we need to learn to do is to bounce our eyes. You're going to see, but you need to bounce your eyes. And here's the question. Do you bounce your eyes away or do you continue to look? I made some of y'all very uncomfortable. That's good. We need to train ourselves with our eyes to not dwell, because you can't help but being attractive to someone maybe that you're not married to. It's just part of who we are. Women look at guys and say, oh, he's a hunk. Now, they may not undress him in their mind, but a lot of times men will see a woman and will undress her in his mind. We don't need to do that. Our imaginations need to be about our spouse. If you're going to fantasize about your spouse, yeah, but I've been with them hundreds of times in our marriage. It doesn't matter. Train yourself, your eyes, your heart, your mind. Don't allow yourself to wander mentally in your heart with your eyes away from your commitment to your spouse. Because that is so, so dangerous. I want us to work on the fact as husbands and wives that as much as we can affair-proof our marriages. And it is something that Satan uses so much where this is concerned. Now, I need to back up and say, now if you're dating, sex doesn't even need to be in the equation. Sex is for marriage only. Period. That's not me saying that. That's God saying that. And if God is the center of your life, guess what? And you're not married, you're going to be celibate. Boy, it gets quiet when you talk like that. But I'm not saying anything different than what the Bible says. Okay. Guard your sexuality daily and devote it entirely to your spouse. Don't rob your spouse of your sexuality. Express it all you want to with your spouse. As much as y'all agree together or disagree together on frequency, all of that, express it to the fullest. But it all belongs to your spouse. It doesn't belong in mind, body, in any way to someone else. Sexual faithfulness requires self-discipline and an awareness of the consequences. I try to set guards in my own life. And I'm going to talk about that for a minute. Me personally. If I ever have the thought about being unfaithful, I have a series of things that go through my mind. And I have set these there on purpose. Number one, I sin against God. If I do that, that is such a selfish act, and I have removed God from being the core of my life, and I have put myself there. An affair is selfish. You sin against God, you sin against your spouse, you sin against your children, you sin against your family, you sin against your name. You sin against your testimony as a Christian. An affair is one of the worst things that can happen in a marriage. It's one of the worst things that can happen because God instituted the family. The family is an institution where husband and wife are committed to one another to raise children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And when you start having sexual infidelity, many times that leads to divorce and it leads to, or at least to a fragmented household. Who is the ones who suffer the worst in a divorce? It's the children. It's the extended family. And many times such feelings of animosity and distrust and all of those things begin to happen in a family. Look at King David. Remember that story? He wasn't where he was supposed to be. He stayed home, went up on the housetop. He saw a good-looking woman taking a bath. He said, I'm the king. I can get away with this. He sent, had his way with her, got her pregnant, had her husband killed, and then he married her. He thought he got away with it. And God sent Nathan the prophet to him and told him a story. Made David mad. And the prophet said to him, you are the man. You are the one. And he said, I have sinned against God. Now, the penalty for adultery was death. But God says, you're not going to die, but listen, here's what's going to happen. It set in motion a course that cost the life of several of his children. It cost the life of that baby, Absalom. Several of his children, one of his daughters, was raped. And it was set in course by his infidelity. People say, well, it's just sex. No, it's not just sex. It affects so many things in a marriage, in a family. So I have to, when I think about this, I have to say, okay, this will cost me my marriage. My wife has already told me, I asked her the other day, she says, how many affairs can I have before I'm in trouble? She says, none. Thank you. My marriage is over. I lose the respect of my children. I lose the respect of my grandchildren. I lose the respect of you. I'll probably lose my job. And I sin against my family name. Is it worth that pleasure? No. They said Dr. Billy Graham would never meet with a woman behind closed doors. In fact, when he was traveling, this has been said that before he would go into a hotel room, he sent one of his staff members ahead of him in case there was a trap set for him. I mean, there was a lot of people that would like to see Billy Graham fall. He was very, very careful about his interaction with the opposite sex. Remember Mike Pence? Remember the media making fun of him because he would not go to a lunch alone with a woman that was not his wife? Why does he do that? It is a safeguard that he has set in because he wants to affair-proof his marriage. I had the opportunity. I play pickleball a lot, and sometimes we go to Heber and play. And one day we decided that we were going, and this lady that was going, and we were going to ride with her. I said, yeah, I want to go. And this other couple was going. Well, during that evening, the other couple backed out. So you know what I did? I backed out too. You know why I backed out? Because I did not want to put any suspicion in my wife's mind that I would be doing anything inappropriate that would make her look bad in any way, or to put me in a position of compromise, or somebody seeing me with another woman in a vehicle going down the road and think, uh-huh, look at there, that preacher. My testimony is important to me. My marriage to this lady right here is important to me. I do not want accusation. I interact with lots of women. I hug women. I hug a lot of you. I go on and tease you. But I want to be very careful that I don't say anything to you that makes you feel uncomfortable in any way where I would be acting towards you in an untoward way. It's important. Sexual purity is important. See, sexual purity in marriage is a commitment to one person for one lifetime. Sexual impurity outside of marriage is celibacy. And see, when you have sex with someone who is not your wife, you're cheating against your future mate. This is a tough message. I want to read a verse in Malachi chapter 2, verse 14. God had something to say about this too. And this is an accusation that people, you cry out, why doesn't the Lord accept my worship? And the Lord answers, I'll tell you why. Because the Lord witnessed the vows you and your wife made when you were young. Now, Kathy was 16. I was 21. I know. I don't recommend that. But we made it, didn't we? We made vows to each other. We pledged to be faithful to one another. We pledged to forsake all others and give ourselves to each other only. And God heard our vows. The people at our family heard our vows. The people at our wedding heard our vows. The preacher who pronounced us husband and wife heard our vows. But mainly God heard our vows. I'll tell you why. Because the Lord witnessed the vows you and your wife made when you were young. But you have been unfaithful to her, though she remained your faithful partner, the wife of your marriage vows. You cannot have an affair. You cannot be sexually pure without God being the center. If you're sexually impure, God is not the center of your life. You are. And in an affair, the Bible says he won't receive your worship. You violated your relationship with God. You have violated your vows to your spouse. God takes marriage serious. God instituted marriage between a man and a woman. Period. And we need to take it serious also. Let's talk about some things that cause people to head toward an affair. And I want to give you several things if you want to write these down. Unexplained discontent with your spouse. Unexplained discontent with your spouse. Does that happen in a marriage? Yes, and it's usually based on some kind of circumstance. Maybe it's a disagreement, or maybe it's something that a spouse is doing that just aggravates the other spouse. Or maybe you don't know why. Feelings of being trapped in your marriage. Can that happen to marriages? Yes, it often does. That is a sign that you need to begin to look at certain things and work on certain things so that that doesn't become a problem. An overwhelming sense that your needs are not being met. A desire to be away from your spouse. A reluctance to spend time at home. Here's a big one. Fantasies about being married to someone else. Comparing your marriage to other marriages. Attraction to someone of the opposite sex. Now, I said, a lot of times that happens naturally. But you don't dwell on that. A constant preoccupation with someone else. An unhealthy attachment to a coworker, friend, or an acquaintance of the opposite sex. We had a family member, and I don't want to get too specific, y'all don't know this person, but the two couples did a lot of things together, and she was having difficulty with her partner and wound up leaving her husband and getting with the man in the other relationship, the friendship. That is not uncommon. It is not uncommon. So, an unhealthy attachment to a coworker, friend, or acquaintance of the opposite sex. The safest boundary to maintain concerning relationship with members of the opposite sex is to avoid one-on-one contact. No little dinners. No going out with someone else who's not your spouse. Couples are okay, but that's got to be guarded too. You got to guard your mind. You got to guard your heart. Because we're sexual creatures. We have to remember that our love is a commitment that we have made to our spouse. We also need to realize that discussing problems about our marriage with a co-worker is inappropriate, or listening to their problems. Now, I have a group that I eat breakfast with and drink coffee with. And on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we go to McDonald's. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we go to the hospital. We were at the hospital one day, and I'm an observer of people. And I was sitting there, and I saw this guy come in. And he sat down with this lady, and he began to complain about his wife. That she wasn't this, and she wasn't doing that, and she didn't do this, and she was sitting there listening. That's been months ago. Every time we go to the hospital, I see that couple together. Guess what is probably, I don't know, but guess what's probably going on? That is a ripe situation for an affair. It might seem innocent at first, but listen, you don't discuss your marital problems with somebody of the opposite sex. If you need to discuss your problems, the best thing to do is to do it with a professional. And you don't want to do it with the town gossip, for sure. I've heard men, and this should be a no-no, that will discuss their sex life with their spouse. Can I tell you that when you do that, you're planting a seed in the mind of that man? When you say how hot your wife is and how did y'all do this and do that, you're planting a seed in that man's mind that later could lead to an affair. We've got to be guarded where our marriages are concerned. See, if we're going to have a strong church, we got to have strong marriages. If we're going to pass this message of faith from generation to generation to generation, guess what? We need strong families and strong marriages to do that in. It's so, so important that we do that. Guess what? I've only covered two. I guess we'll come back next week and talk about easier stuff. Please, do everything that you can do to guard your marriage. Affairs are horrible things. They're horrible sins against God, against your spouse, and against your family. Do all you can do. Let's have strong families. Let's stand together. We're going to sing a worship song. Prayer team, would you come? If you need prayer for any reason, now if you come forward, don't mean you're having an affair, okay? If you have prayer for anything, maybe you need to just get saved today. That'd be a great thing to make Jesus Lord. This has been a very direct, very, very difficult message, but it's one that is much, much needed. We can solve a lot of problems if we will work on our marriages. Father, thank you. Thank you, first of all, for the institution of marriage. And I thank you for all of those who have been faithful and committed to that marriage. And Father, I thank you for those who have messed up and have come and made it right and now have strong marriages. But Lord, convict our hearts where we are vulnerable and open to wrong situations, wrong friendships, wrong thoughts. Things that we look at with our eyes and think about in our minds, convict us of those things so that we can fortify our marriages today. We thank you in Jesus' name.